What the EFL? It's a podcast about the Football League. Coming up, the Old Farm Derby is back. Will Sunderland still go for Will Still, or is Mike Dodds on? Pompey win big in League One. And managers get sacked / appointed. This is What the EFL. And we're with you a little later than usual this week, listener. I've got my two EFL experts with me, Matt Davis Adams. Alongside me are Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. One of them delayed the show because they went to actual Lapland. The other one, I feel pretty sure, has been to a place called Lapland that's a little bit seedier and possibly on a trading estate in Slough. I'll let you work out who's who. Say hello to Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. Morning, chaps.
I'll let Sam have the second one just in case Mrs. Clark's listening. But yeah, no, we went to Lapland. It was amazing. Yeah, Elfie gave us an invite to see the big man, so we had to get on the plane and head to the Arctic Circle. It's absolutely mega. And the bonus of it, obviously, we did snowmobiles, we did husky rides, which was a little bit scary, I've got to be honest, because I had to steer it off the back. So I was sort of hanging on for dear life. reindeer rides, all that sort of nonsense. But the best thing about it is that we had to have loads of new warm gear. So I've got warm boots, I've got warm thermals, I've got warm everything. So this winter, when it comes to coming out and watching EFL matches, Premier League matches, I'm sorted. So it's just a pity, Sam, we're not the same size.
I'm not going to go down the Slough trading estate route, but just on Lapland, my other half reckons that when she was a kid, she got on a plane. I think she swears it was a British Airways plane, and they fly somewhere and they don't actually land, and there's like entertainment in terms of Christmas bits and bobs on the plane, maybe a Santa and stuff, and then they re-land. There's no photo evidence of this. Her mum and dad don't even recall it, but she reckons she got on the plane, they said they're going to Lapland, stuff happens in the air, that's it.
Wow, okay.
It's the kind of thing you dream up as a kid, but there's no knowledge of it from anyone else but her.
Bizarre. That is incredible. People do go for the day. You can go for the day and sort of have your meet and greet with Santa and do a few things and then get on the plane home. That would be mental. I wouldn't recommend that.
Maybe there was a bit of turbulence. They didn't land and the mum and dad have had a few gin and tonics and there's just no recollection on their behalf. That's all I can put.
There were sing songs on the plane. There were games. We had a toilet roll game, which I think that they just made up on the spot. It's like left side v right side. Who can get the toilet roll to the back of the plane fastest without it snapping, all that sort of nonsense. So no, it was good fun. It was very good experience. Won't forget it. Kids won't forget it either. So yeah, it was a real treat.
All right. Well done, Clarky. You win Dad of the Year. I, on the other hand, showed my 5-year-old son Home Alone for the first time at the weekend, and he's had nightmares every night since. We better get back to the football, haven't we? It's a busy midweek of action in the EFL. We'll talk through some of the headlines so far next. Right, so we're recording on Wednesday morning, so there's plenty still to happen. But on Tuesday, Ipswich went top of the league. This is ahead of Leicester's game on Wednesday. A late 2-1 win at Watford. Ipswich have officially made the best ever start by a Championship side, but Leicester could take it off them tonight as we record. That's how tight it is between those two. They've scored 100 league goals in a calendar year for the first time in their history. We'll talk more about them later because we're going to preview the game with Norwich. Another big result, though. Sunderland beating Leeds by a 2-0, thanks to Job Bellingham. Mike Dodds, Sam, in charge for this one after Tony Mowbray was dismissed. Will Still, according to Sky, is the man that they want to replace him. I'd like to just put out a public plea. Don't appoint the caretaker because it never works, right? So maybe it will be Will Still, but Mike Dodds couldn't really be doing much more, could he?
No, and Luke 09 was very nice about him post-match, name-checking him. And Michael Proctor, who's a bit of a throwback. I played a few games up front with Michael Proctor at Swindon. He was a bit of a prodigy coming through at Sunderland, if memory serves me right. Good to see those two in the dugout and getting two colossal victories, you got to say. And sounded like it was a bit of a different approach, a bit more pragmatic from Sunderland tonight in comparison to what they've been the last few seasons, which is a wonderful watch and pretty open, loads of flair players. So great for them to go a slightly different way and achieve a brilliant result. But I would imagine they're probably going to go a little bit left field with this appointment, probably in keeping with the strategy in the transfer market I would imagine that's why they've dispensed of Tony Mowbray. And yeah, watch this space. But yeah, two brilliant results from two guys that clearly know the players, know the club really well. And they put together a great game plan last night.
Leeds, Clarky, they were 7 unbeaten before that. Because of that Ipswich win as well, it means there's an 8-point gap between the automatic places and Leeds, who are in third. It's putting a little bit of pressure on them, isn't it? And in particular, just looking at their fixtures, they've got Coventry at home next. You'd expect them to win that at the weekend. But then, 2 days before Christmas, Ipswich come to Elland Road. Are we almost in must-win territory for Barker's Folk if they want to crash the top two?
Well, if the top two continue at the current pace, yes, it would be must-win territory. But surely they won't. It still feels incredible that, you know, the consistency of wins that the Ipswich and Leicester are producing. History will tell you that there'll be dips and wobbles, as we like to say, along the way. So they've got to keep chipping away. They've not got to give up hope, Leeds. In this game, it's just one of those nights where they come up against a really well-organised team that had changed their system, worked very, very hard, pretty much solely, I would imagine, on how do we stop Leeds? How do we quieten their front guys? Because they've been electric, haven't they? You know, Routier and Somerville and all the other guys. They've just, James. And they just... yeah, sat in with that 5-3-2, but also got really, really tight when they had to. Hit them on the counters, looked really, really dangerous every time they had a set piece, Sunderland. So yeah, I think actually this performance will give the team a lot more belief for the rest of the season, because Mowbray taught them the fun way, the attacking way. Dodds has shown them, well, you can do this other, more pragmatic side. So whoever does take over will maybe get a side that feels they can be a little bit more rounded. I still think it's out of order, by the way, on Tony Mowbray. For me, a very, very harsh dismissal, and one that I think was probably, the seeds were sown for this in the summer. We heard whispers that he wasn't going to make pre-season. He did. And for me, there's no justification for making the change. You know, their results had flattened out a bit, but goodness me, he was still doing a terrific job. So yeah, really feel sorry for Mowbray, and whoever takes over, if it's Will Steele, will get a pretty good group of players, I reckon.
Yeah, Mowbray won't be out of work for very long. One wouldn't imagine. West Brom won 2-0 at Rotherham. We'll talk about Rotherham in our new manager chat, but they're propping up the rest and looking in big trouble. Adrian, you're such a big proponent of Carlos Corberan, aren't you? And this was a big result for them. You'd expect there might have been a little bit of new manager bounce for Rotherham, but after those back-to-back defeats to Leicester and Sunderland, West Brom needed to get back to winning ways, and they look well set for a proper playoff push again, don't they? As we record, they're in fifth, but they just seem a bit more well-rounded than some of the other teams around.
Yeah, well, they're just solid, aren't they? Really, really solid. I know that they've had a couple of indifferent results since I'd seen them win at Cardiff. But yeah, he's such a good organiser of teams. And in this game, they just had to sort of suck it up and accept the fact this was going to be a dog of a game. It's going to be really, really hard to create chances against a team that are lifted by the new manager, that hasn't really had a lot of time to work with them. So the focus, I think, would have been on shape and defence. And you just have to look at the shot count. Rotherham had 4, West Brom had 6, you know, 2 apiece on target. It wasn't easy on the eye. And West Brom managed to score their 2 on target. They've got good forwards, haven't they? Obviously, Jed Wallace, great to see him back off the bench to score. Dean Garnow's having a cracking season, got in on the act as well. And I'll be staggered if West Brom aren't in the playoffs. They won't get automatic because I don't think they're going to score enough goals. But I think that they will avoid defeat more than a lot of the teams around them between now and the end of the season. They'll grind out results, and I'd be surprised if they're not between, you know, positions 3 to 6.
Well, like West Brom, Blackburn had suffered back-to-back defeats, but they got a 2-1 win against Bristol City at Ewood Park. Blackburn, we say we like them a lot, which is vaguely patronising, Sam, and the way that they play. So you can say something a bit more meaningful about them, if you like. Or you can explain to me why it's not really happened for Liam Manning so far. 1 win in 5 for him since he's taken charge of Bristol City.
Yeah, I mean, probably quite difficult coming in, you know, mid-season when things weren't drastically going badly at Bristol City. I think, you know, they spoke about the new manager coming in and implementing this kind of style that they want to run through the football club. And I don't think that's been particularly evident in his first week. So I think it's just one win in six under him. And I think a lot of the supporters will probably be thinking, would we have been better sticking with Nigel Pearson for a little bit longer? So I think it's a bit of a bedding in period. It may take time. I think he's a talented coach, but at the moment, the changes aren't really evident. And yeah, Blackburn are a good team. They're incredibly inconsistent. We know that. Schmoddix is having a wonderful season, created a lovely goal for Sigurdsson here with a beautiful reverse pass. And then I enjoyed the Adam Wharton to Scott Wharton goal to to essentially give them the second and the victory. So yeah, another disappointing result for Bristol City, and I'm sure that they're very split as a support base at the moment because the results have been poor.
Yeah, lost 3 of 4. Back-to-back home games next though, Clarkie, against Sunderland and Hull. Obviously, home form's always important, and it's not been great for Bristol City over the years, but it's the best way to get supporters on side, right? Is to, I don't know, take 4 to 6 points from those two games.
Yeah, which won't be easy because we've just been talking about Sunderland. We could have a new manager by then. If not, they come into it confidently. And I rate Hull. You know, I've been singing their praises for most of the season. Yeah, I mean, it's good that Tommy Conway's back and fit and available. And I think he makes a little bit of a difference. But yeah, I think with somebody like Liam Manning, it's such a difference, I would imagine, to Nigel Pearson. You know, not just in terms of the age range of the two managers, but just the way they go about their business, probably the nature of training as well. I think you'd be hard pushed to find two managers that were more different, really. So I'm not surprised that it's going to be an acclimatization period. The players have got to just get used to some new ideas, and I think they'll have fun in the end. It's just that for Liam Manning, he needs results quite quickly so that the players get full buy-in on what he's saying, because even though they might be enjoying the sessions and the different ideas, unless they're winning, that there could be some pushback. So he's got to get some wins quick. This is an opportunity, but it won't be easy.
No real threat of relegation, but they want more than that, don't they? Bristol City, who said it time and time again, it's a club that really ought to have been in the Premier League by now. Two teams looking to get back into the Championship met on Monday night at Fratton Park. Sam was on hand to see Portsmouth beat Bolton 2-0 in the battle of the top two. Pompey 6 points clear, albeit they played a game more. Sam, Portsmouth, were they just about worth the win here? I mean, it might have been different were it not for that inexplicable Dion Charles miss at 0-0.
May have been different, but are more than good value for the win, especially in the second half. They managed it incredibly well. I expected a reaction from Ian Everett's side, and it wasn't really forthcoming, so much so that Dion Charles was taken off with about 10, 15 to go, which surprised me. Didn't change the shape, Ian Everett. It was like-for-like substitutions, and Portsmouth got their tactical setup spot on. The big decision for John Massino pre-match was the kind of midfield, because Christian Sadie had been very good in the last victory at Northampton, but he took him out of the side, pushed Robertson, the young loanee from Manchester City, higher, and Morrell and Pack resumed their partnership in the middle of the pitch. And those two are brilliant together. That trio worked really well. And the centre forward, oof, this is the biggest question mark, you know, at the moment with Colby Bishop out. I mean, Yenge against Santos, I mean, it was a battle for the ages, honestly. It was like 1995 all over again. Just two big physical players going at it. The ball's rolled into Yenge. Yenge's touch is good. His awareness, his understanding of the position's really good. And it was all emphasised by that second goal, the way that they had this battle. They both ended up on the deck. Yenge obviously got to his feet. Two substitutes, Gavin White and Terry Devlin, combined brilliantly. That freshness when the two wide players were just finding the pace a little bit difficult. He made the changes and those two combined, and Yenge continued his run into the box, a little bit sharper than Santos, ran the back of him and poked home the second. So his performance, vitally important, and what confidence to give to the manager, the rest of the players, that they don't have to be overly reliant on Colby Bishop, don't have to rush him back. Now they've got a deputy who's capable of doing that. So that was another standout performance. The set-piece threat, I mean, Jack Sparks, we spoke about him on the podcast a few weeks ago. His delivery is a joke. So that, I think that's 7 goals from centre halves before Christmas, which is pretty unique. Shaughnessy, obviously, with the first. Thomason, the Bolton player who let him go. So they've got a really nice style of play, some great individuals, and they can also kill you from dead balls. So it's a good combination, I would suggest. And listen, it's an open division, but Portsmouth have got a great chance now. And having seen them in the flesh and having seen what they did in the second half against a top side in Bolton, they can be really excited about the rest of the season.
Yeah, that is seriously impressive. Obviously, I was away when this happened. And I was like, whoa, okay. When I saw the result in the morning, because I'm a big fan of Bolton, and I think they've, you know, I really fancy them to be top two. But this was professional by the sound of it. Tell me about this Yenge then. If you could compare him with one player, because I haven't seen him in the flesh, if you can compare him with a player, who might it be that we'd all know? Is there anyone?
Difficult, you know, because he's got a lot of good attributes, and he can, you know, I spoke about the way he was taking it in to feet and, you know, bringing others into play, but he actually gave him an outlet down the sides as well, which I don't think Colby Bishop is probably capable of. And he's not lightning fast, but he kind of galloped onto things and got there and stretched the play. So he was a real handful. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. I'll come back to you throughout the show with when I get a name for you.
It's
a bit of a mess sometimes. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But if you're winning the free kick or you're winning the throw or you're stopping the centre half from heading it, you've done your job. And there's all those little things that I probably didn't grasp until later on in my career. You know, I didn't really want to do the ugly side of the game. Mm. It was only when I got older, I understood that winning the throw for your team or stopping the centre half heading it is imperative to win a game of football. Mm. And gives the rest of the players, the midfield players especially, they love that. They love that if the ball's not going back over their head. So he did all that and more. I thought it was a brilliant performance from him. Seems really likable as well. He was fully engrossed in the celebrations with the fans and what have you. So, yeah, good on him because he's been the bridesmaid a little bit so far this season.
Yeah, yeah. No prizes for gracefulness at being centre forward. It's just about what you do, isn't it? You
know, yeah, no one does that to Santos as well. I mean, he is like at that level, the best possibly in terms of his competitive nature and also what he does with the ball. So to disrupt that was, you know, massive part of the game plan. And yeah, disappointed in Bolton. I really was. But yeah, they've been on a terrific run, not been conceding goals. And this was just a little bit of a fallback maybe into the pattern of yesteryear. And I hope that's just a one-off.
Just a quick one. If you've got no striker that holds the ball or won't run the channels, you stop making runs, especially the hold-up play. If you're the midfielder, why would you keep on making those support runs? You just stay put and just wait for it to come back at you. It gives everyone that bit more confidence to go forward and to be more ambitious. So yeah, well done to him. Sounds like it was, yeah, he's come in at the right time and delivered.
Mm. Pompey playing Shrewsbury at the weekend. Bolton host Bristol Rovers. Speaking of Bristol Rovers, they're one of many teams who've changed their managers of late. We're going to run through a couple of those shuffles next. So we did Tony Mowbray, his predecessor at Sunderland Clarkie, Alex Neil. He's out at Stoke and he's probably wishing he hadn't jumped ship from the Black Cats at this point, isn't he? I mean, the results speak for themselves. They've not been good of late. They're only just above the relegation zone. They hardly score any goals. We're going to talk about some harsh sackings, and we think that Mowbray was one of those. Not sure this really comes into that category, does it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think Alex Neil can have any complaints. And I don't think there'll be much sympathy, if I'm honest, because of the nature of his exit from Sunderland. He walked out on them. He sort of, obviously, if you go back in time to what happened, I think Sunderland refused to offer him the kind of deal he wanted. Stoke dangled that carrot in front of him and he jumped ship, and you know he's entitled to do that. But, and you know, I'm sure that he's got a nice hefty payoff, but career wise it was a bad move. Sunderland very much a team on the up. They continue to be on the rise, in my opinion. But for Stoke, it's been, yeah, they've just meandered, haven't they? And there's been no real progress for years now. And you wouldn't mind if you were watching good football, but Stoke fans have even been denied that. And I think the game against Swansea, by all accounts, on Tuesday night was an absolute stinker. Just no quality whatsoever. I don't think it's a happy club behind the scenes. And yeah, Alex Neil never really looked like he was enjoying it, and neither did his players. So where do they go now? I haven't got a clue what they're going to do moving forwards. They probably need to follow suit and go for, you know, an identity manager and try and instill a philosophy throughout the club. But that's going to take time. So yeah, really, really bad season so far for Stoke.
Saw that. I think John Eustace has been linked with it, which...
He's the favourite at the moment. Mm. Even money behind John Dahl Thomason. Don't think so.
No, possibly not. I mean, I don't know if finances would come into that. They'd be able to give him a better deal at Stoke. I mean, I could obviously understand them going for John Eustace given, you know, what he was doing at Birmingham. I think it would be obviously he'd want to get back in, but I think it would be a risk just because no one's been able to get that right at Stoke. And there's been such a turnaround in players. Do you know what? I think that in most simplistic terms, what's going on at QPR and Sheffield Wednesday, I know, you know, maybe we're still waiting to see what happens at both those clubs, but given that they've had such an impact in such a short time, I think that probably makes an owner's mind up for them when you're looking at Alex Neil having had the period that he has now and not really been able to implement much of a style. Loads of players coming in, probably been back to a degree in the transfer market and been able to change his squad around. You've got to hit the ground running now. And I think he's had a decent amount of time to imprint something on that team, and it's really not been evident. So if it's not John Eustace, I expect them to be, like Sunderland, probably scouring the European leagues and to come up with someone who can affect things quickly, a bit like Unai Emery at Aston Villa. You know, it's achievable, isn't it? You've got quality players, a big group of players. Get them playing a brand of football repetitively on the training ground week after week and hopefully see the results of that on a match day. QPR and Sheffield Wednesday, they're doing that right now.
Mm. All right then. Well, that is Dick Schroeder, who is 9-1. He's joining based on Sam's logic. Then he's currently manager of Castellón. Wow. We all remember his glorious...
Well, they might as well do something different. I'm looking at the names, Matt. Since Tony Pulis, Mark Hughes, Paul Lambert, Gary Rowett, Nathan Jones, Michael O'Neill, and Alex Neil. So, look, you know, all British, all pretty experienced managers.
Couple with Neil in the name.
Yeah. None of them known really for their expansive brand of football. I don't know. I just think just get a guy that's going to play some good football and bring some fun back to that stadium. Because I'll tell you what, every time I look at that ground, and I'm going there soon, every time I look at that, it's more and more empty seats. It's a sad state of affairs.
If you think that it's time for the return of Nathan Jones, you can get 40-1 on that. If you don't know how betting works, that means if you put a pound on it, you'll lose a pound. Also, in managerial movements in the Championship, you mentioned Swansea, who drew 1-1 at Stoke thanks to Harry Darling's last-minute header on Tuesday. They sacked Michael Duff, less than 6 months in charge, only won one of his final 8 matches. What do you think about this one, Sam? Does this come under the harsh category?
Maybe slightly, but it comes under the owner taking large responsibility for appointing someone who was definitely the wrong fit. I mean, I think me and Clarkey like to think we've covered enough of the EFL over the last decade or longer to recognise that, yes, Michael Duff is a good manager, a good motivator, tactically set up Cheltenham to win football matches, and then latterly Barnsley, which I think he did a good job at, kind of changing their style, making them a bit more pragmatic, direct, loves the 3-5-2. You look at the profile of the players in Swansea's squad, it wasn't the right fit. And Swansea fans, and I know people will get annoyed about this, and I get annoyed about it to a degree, but the Swansea fans have been spoilt by the type of football that they've had to watch over the last decade or two. Invariably, it's been short, sharp, incisive football, building from the back. I mean, I used to hate playing against Swansea because I just did doggies for 90 minutes. You didn't get the ball. You know, they just kept the ball for fun. Michael Duff is not that type of manager. I think Steve Cooper changed it a little bit during his tenure, and he got pelters for a period. So I just didn't understand the appointment. And that is not to say that Michael Duff won't go on and get another good job and be a success. He will be. He's not a bad manager. He's very switched on. But in terms of the squad they had at Swansea and in terms of the type of football that the supporters demand to a degree, I just did not understand it whatsoever.
It's too many technically excellent players to fit in a team. Like, so he, because of the style of football he had, he wanted to deploy, he couldn't fit enough of those technical players into the team, which means you're leaving, you know, good players out, and those good players get frustrated. And I think that that has a knock-on effect as well, that you're not really pleasing anybody. And the guys that you are picking, you're asking them to do slightly different things to what they were brought in to do. So, yeah, I think there was a lot of head scratching, I would imagine, on the training ground at Swansea, behind the scenes. And I actually think it was quite a smart decision to just accept that they'd made the wrong call, wrong fit, and move on, you know, before things got worse.
Michael Duff's predecessors, Russell Martin, Steve Cooper, Graham Potter, Carlos Carvajal, maybe tells you the problem at Swansea isn't in the dugout, but in the boardroom. Alan Sheehan in temporary charge as they try and persuade Spurs to let them have Ange's assistant, Chris Davis.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in League One, Dino Marmaria out at Burton. We had a good laugh at the fact that he seemingly appointed himself. He didn't sack himself, though. Ousted after a fourth straight defeat against Stevenage last weekend. Gary Mills is the caretaker there. Another one that we saw coming, Sam, I think this.
Yeah, and yeah, disappointing because they had that period last year. Seem to remember them turning over some big teams at home, beat Sheffield Wednesday, if memory serves me right, Barnsley as well towards the tail end of the season. And the strength at Burton over the last few years, and certainly under that manager, was them defensively. And they've got issues in that regard. Right now, I think only three teams conceded more than Burton's 29. They average less than a goal a game going the other way. So their success under him built on solid foundations. They conceded three in the last six games of last season, and that has just not been evident this year. And it puts pressure on your forward players, of which they haven't got enough that are capable of getting them a goal. I think the top goal scorer is a midfield player, Powell, with four. So if you're not getting clean sheets and you haven't got that solid defensive unit, then, you know, Burton are going to struggle to win games. And I think it's probably been a product of that. But yeah, a little bit harsh, because I think he did some good work, especially last year, in setting the team up and upsetting the odds. But we'll see where they go now. They've been, I think there's been quite a few kind of non-league managers, Dean Brennan, who I know. The Barnet manager, obviously they were humbled a little bit last night by Newport in the cup. But he's on their list. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised maybe if it's a slightly left field appointment from someone who's done sterling work at a lower level.
Matt Taylor in at Bristol Rovers, Clarkey. They beat Crewe 4-2 in the cup on Tuesday, drew 1-1 against Cheltenham in his first game. I looked at this and thought, that seems eminently sensible, which is not something that I often think when it comes to football clubs appointing managers.
No, well, yeah, geographically, obviously, he's back in the same kind of area as well, you know, where, you know, down in Exeter. It's not that, not a million miles away, is it, Bristol? So that might suit him and his family as well. He inherits a pretty good squad, doesn't it, at Bristol Rovers. I think he's an excellent manager that was doing pretty well at Rotherham. I know that this season's been a real struggle. They're really not scoring goals, but that's not really what Matt Taylor's about. I think he's a very capable guy. And I would imagine after Joey Barton, we've all seen him in the news. Some of his messages filtered all the way through to Lapland, let me tell you. Imagine the dressing room. You know, you got a character like Joey Barton, you know, pretty divisive, let's be honest, not always easiest to get on with. And then you got him coming in, Matt Taylor. You know, he's a good, solid bloke. I think excellent man manager, very, very sensible. And he knows the leagues, doesn't he? He's a real expert, I think, at that level. And I think, yeah, I think it's a really, really shrewd appointment. You know, how far he can take them, we'll have to see. But I can see this guy potentially staying there, you know, for a number of seasons.
Neil Harris at Cambridge, Sam, he's landed on his feet, hasn't he? Better equipped for League One possibly than League Two, where we saw him last. He's brought his career full circle. He began his playing career at Cambridge City. Interesting.
Played against him there, yeah.
Did you? Wow.
I did, yeah. When he was like a bit of a whiz kid coming, he was at Cambridge City, obviously, pre going to Millwall. It's like Neil Harris this, Neil Harris that. Yeah. And got his move and never looked back, did he? What a career he had. So yeah, good sort of full circle move this one.
What do you think, Sam? Obviously, you know him better than Clarkie and I do. What do you think about him using the same backroom team that Mark Bonner had? He did have David Livermore, didn't he, as his assistant? But he'll have Barry Corey, he used to play with at Southend, and Kevin Betsy. Harris said they wanted a head coach to come in and work with the current staff because they've headhunted them, recruited them, and believe in them. If I didn't feel my attributes would suit them, I wouldn't have come, but I feel like I've inherited really good people and talented staff. Do you think he's just saying the right thing there, or does he actually mean that?
It's a shame for Liv, isn't it? I know him well. Hopefully you can get him in some capacity, get him working with him, because those two have been manager and assistant for so many years now, and obviously had the promotion way back when at Millwall. So it's a shame for him. But he'll know both those lads. And obviously played with Barry Corr. Kevin Betsy had the Crawley job, didn't he? For a period. I remember Clarkie speaking about him because he's a product of Arsenal, wasn't he?
He was flying with the FA. He was one of these England youth managers. Arsenal headhunted him. He did a pretty good job, I've got to say, with the youth team. I think he got promoted to be the 21s coach, and then he couldn't resist the lure of being a first team manager. But yes, since the Crawley disaster, he went to Wigan with Kolo Touré. That didn't last very long, and now he's part of the backroom staff at Cambridge. So he needs a bit of an upturn, doesn't he, as well?
It'd be interesting to see how it goes, because obviously there was the ability at Gillingham to build the squad, to mould it a little bit. They were being backed in the transfer market, obviously did a lot of work last January. I don't imagine that will be the case at Cambridge. But what they have had under Mark Bonner is a really good structure. Very difficult to play against, great at sitting in against teams, taking big scalps. I don't think it'll be too dissimilar. I don't imagine Neil Harris is going to go overly expansive. But with someone like Kevin Betsy there, maybe there is room to change the style a little bit. So that will be fascinating. He's a safe pair of hands. Hopefully he'll get the forward players going. People like Tom Nichols, Ollie Hawkins, they had good periods when they initially went to Gillingham. So yeah, safe pair of hands. Intrigued to see how it goes. And yeah, shame for Mark Bonner, because I think he's come across really well over the last few years and been incredibly successful for that club. So I'd be interested to see where he pops up next.
Yeah, absolutely. One we missed in the Championship, Clarke, Liam Richardson in at Rotherham. He's a lifesaver. Whether he can keep Rotherham up is a different thing. Is this maybe with an eye on League One next season as well? Obviously, the aim is to try and stay up, but they already look a little bit short, as we often say at Championship level. If you want somebody to get you out of the division, he's fairly well placed to do that.
Yeah, and you want someone that was not going to jump ship if you do end up going down and think that they're above it, do you? So, yeah, I think it's the right level. They've pitched it correctly. Obviously, he's relatively local. I think he was living in Yorkshire anyway, slightly further north in Yorkshire. So, yeah, it feels like a good fit. He's a manager that me and Sam have praised quite a bit in the past. Good organiser. Excellent on the counter-attack, his Wigan teams. Really, really sharp. And that's what they need. That's what they're lacking a little bit, Rotherham. Against West Brom, nullified them pretty well. When I saw them against Preston, nullified them for long periods. They're not a car crash of a team, but what they don't look like doing is scoring very many goals. And that's an issue when you need to win matches to stay in a division. So what he needs to work on is the firepower and turn them into more of a potent counter-attacking side. It's interesting, Hugill got the nod over Nombe in his first match, and then he also brought on Tom Eve. So I'd imagine he's going to have a target man and then have some flyers down the side. So they're going to go quite direct at times and break quickly on teams. And it's how well they do that between now and the end of the season that will seal their fate.
Yeah, nice easy start for him. Next five games, away at Plymouth, away at Leicester, home to Middlesbrough and Sunderland, away at Blackburn. Cheers for that. Right.
Is it right that he had to go in solo as well? He had to inherit their staff.
Yeah. I think it's one of the guys was at Aston Villa, but was with Matt Taylor at Exeter. He got headhunted there. And then it's Wayne Carlisle, and I think the goalkeeping coach. So I'm not sure about this. Honestly, I think they Oh, I think they need, he's braver than me, basically, with that run of games, because I think they need snookers. And you had Nathan Jones, I think, went for it, was close to taking it, and someone else quite high profile as well turned it down. So you're talking about, you know, decent caliber of managers, probably not happy with that arrangement, I would imagine. And, you know, I just wasn't having the, I wasn't having the owner taking so long to start interviewing people because he was having a holiday.
Like, I think he's a character. Like, I think the owner is a character.
Yeah, I just don't really get that. I just was thinking, what must the fans be thinking? And then with all respect, I just think you probably need someone to really, you need to appoint someone and have a right go here. And I'm not sure Liam Richardson's that guy, in my opinion, despite him having the relative success at Wigan or the success in the promotion, wasn't
it? Yeah, making managers come in on their own without bringing staff, obviously, is going to be cheaper. So that's the first consideration, I guess, for these clubs. But I wonder whether Ange Postecoglou's had a part in this, because obviously Ange, famously, doesn't have staff. He just accepts who he's got and he works with them and he just backs himself to get them on board and to work with them. So maybe I don't know, some of these chairmen have looked at that and thought, well, let's give that a bash.
Yeah, seems to be the trend at the moment. All right, we're going to have a look at some weekend games next. Now, Portman Road host the Old Farm Derby on Saturday lunchtime. Ipswich Town welcome Norwich City. Well, I mean, they don't welcome them, but you understand the implication. Ipswich have won 9 of 10 home league games, only beaten by Leeds back in August. Clark, it looks like a home win if you go by the form book, but David Wagner, always a game from the sack. He could buy himself plenty of time if he gets a positive result here.
Yeah, he's had a couple of big away wins, hasn't he? Was it Cardiff and Bristol City? I've got to say, I feel like Ipswich could absolutely smash Norwich here. I think that the atmosphere is going to be incredible at Portman Road. The entire county of Suffolk is going to want to get tickets for the game, and they're going to make some noise. And because they've not had this derby for a few years now, and I can see the confidence sort of coursing through their veins. Obviously, we've talked at length about how good they are going forward. Yeah, it's going to be tremendously exciting. Obviously, since that defeat against West Brom, 4 wins on the spin. Against the best teams in the division, Ipswich, 1-8. Lost 2. That's against the top half sides this year. 1-11 in the last 13. It is amazing. And I thought the goal that they scored, actually, against Watford, the winner from Sam Morsy, who, by the way, was one game away from being suspended. So the manager was asked afterwards, did you think about resting him for the East Anglian derby? It's like, no. What message does that send out to the rest of the team that match is more important than this match? Absolutely not. And, you know, he's bang on there. But it was Morsy, the deep midfielder, that goes and presses the centre-half, wins the ball, runs through and sticks it in the onion bag. So that, I think, was, yeah, just sort of showed that they've got, you know, all sides to them, really. They've got the good football, the movement, the speed, but they've also got that real togetherness and determination. Brilliant. One thing about Ipswich, though, I just want to drop in before I let Sam have a go. And this might be sort of music to Norwich's ears, is that they're slow starters in each half at Ipswich. For a team that's got a record as sensational as them, they're on -3 goal difference in the first quarter of an hour. And in the first quarter of an hour of a second half, they're also on minus goal difference, which I thought was weird, really, given how many they've scored. It's that period, 16 minutes to half time, where they are rampant in that spell. 20 goals, just 3 conceded. So, yeah, just Ipswich are a team maybe you can catch cold, but over the course of the 90, I'd back them here to potentially destroy Norwich.
First meeting, Sam, since the 2018-19 season. You've got to go all the way back to 2009, since Ipswich last beat Norwich at Portman Road. Can you make any case for the Canaries? I mean, they got 24 hours less to prepare for the game as well, haven't they? Because they've got Sheffield Wednesday at home on Wednesday. It looks a tricky one for them.
No, I can't really. I'm not even going to throw in the derby game. Form goes out of the window. I mean, Norwich have got a bit of an identity. It's not as if it's just, you know, collection of players picked out of a hat and chucked out there. Tactically, it'll be interesting because Kenny McLean's played centre-half recently. So him up against Hurst, I'd be frightened for my old teammate Kenny in that race, because I think Hurst gives them a different dimension what he can do running behind. So him and Duffy, it could be. That'll be interesting. I think Hurst is in a rich vein of form at the moment. Nunez has come back into the midfield, obviously, since Kenny's gone back there. So it's a slightly different look about them. Successive clean sheets at home. They're a bit more pragmatic. Maybe David Wagner's just looked at that side to try and make them a little bit harder to beat. And they'll have to be against this rip-roaring Ipswich team who could afford to make 5 changes, I think I counted, at Watford in the week. So that just shows you, you know, no team can make that amount of changes and seamlessly players step in, know their role, know the patterns, know the style of play, you know, all the things that I've said in the last few weeks. So now this is a incredibly tough proposition for Norwich. I expect them to lose, and I expect them to probably lose heavy.
Yeah, that Nunez-Sara axis, 2 really good footballers, but they're better with the ball than without it. I think you take Kenny McLean out of that midfield, that bit of steel in there, experience. Now, those two lads might not know what's hit them when Ipswich and their attacking midfielders come zipping balls in and around them. That could be a challenging afternoon.
He said in the presser the other day that, I think he said, like, tenacity, Kenny, absolutely. Reading of the game, yeah, first class. Really good in the air. I'm sure he's one of them that used to duck under the ball in training, like, you know, one of them that, like you, Clarkie. Like,
I never had any shampoo, did I, in my wash bag? That's why I never headed the ball.
Maybe it's come later in his career, Kenny. It was not something that I used to thought stand out in his armoury.
Well, Norwich have scored in every away game this season. Not expecting it to be 0-0, but it'll be a tough one for the Canaries, that's for sure. In League One, it's Derby against Wickham at Pride Park. The Rams have won their last 5 in the league, whilst Wickham have lost 4 on the bounce. I was going to ask you, what's changed with Derby, Sam? But one thing that would stand out would be the defence. They've only conceded once in this 5-match winning run, and Paul Warne finally getting a handle on things.
Yeah, since Stevenage, I think, when we spoke of them, didn't they? Because they lost really poorly against 2 teams that they away from home that they should have beaten or certainly got points from. They've conceded 1 and scored 13. So this is a brilliant little run they're on. Joint best defence in the division, as you say, Matt. I think Mendes Lang's form as well. I think 5 goals, 2 assists in the last 7. He was very good at Orient. And Sibley as well, I think, coming back into form, kind of advanced midfield position. So weathered a bit of a storm. Warne, I thought it was building. Probably quite fortunate actually that they didn't act, although it feels like this is a appointment for the long haul and that he's been backed by the decision makers. But still, you know, losing a couple of games, which certainly got the fans talking. And this is a game where they're huge favourites. I mean, Wickham have not won in 8. And they lost against Morecambe in the FA Cup, 3 points from 24. When I saw them early part of the season, I thought it was a side that were caught between 2 styles of play, really. And I think that is still evident. Still chopping and changing. You had Taylor, McCleary, Vokes, all on the bench the other day. Dale Taylor, I think he's on loan from Forest. We spoke about him earlier on the season as well, up front with my old mate Dave Wheeler. So still scratching around, I think, for his best permutations, certainly in the forward areas. Luke Leahy, top goal scorer with 5, which you wouldn't envisage with that amount of firepower and experience in the squad. So it's a big, big couple of weeks for Matty Bloomfield, who, let's not forget, I think when they had a decent run early in the season, was given a longer contract but by the owners. So they've backed him as well. And, you know, I really dearly hope that he can turn things around, because it's such a legend hero status at that club, and there has been, you know, a lot to like about his early days in management, but this is his first real tough period.
Yeah, I crunched some numbers for you, Matt. Crunched them. 48 points. If he's managed for 42 games in all competitions, if we even count cup games as 3 pointers, he's earned 48 points across 42 games. That's gonna just about keep you in the division. I looked at Gareth Ainsworth's last 42 games in charge of this same Wickham, not 48 points, but 67 points across that 42-game period. So it is quite the drop-off. It is a massive drop. So, you know,
it's too lazy of me to say that Ainsworth will be back there by the end of the season.
I think we all think he'll probably will be, don't we? I mean, it feels written in the stars. We like Matt Bloomfield. He's a great guy, real legend there, but he's scrambling around. I've also looked at the makeup of that squad, because when I see the names there that Sam rattled off, you think, well, old. And then you look at the Dale Taylors of this world, you know, on loan from Forest, you think young. Really, really interesting. So I had a look at all the players used this season. 9 over 30s, for me, too many. And 9 23 or unders. A lot of those unproven loan players, 5 of them from Premier League clubs that had very limited to no league experience. That key peak catchment age, I would say, is 24 to 29, where the players are at their very best, 6. So for me, it's the wrong way round. You know, I would, if I was a manager looking to construct a squad, I would have 15 players in that bracket. And then a couple of, you know, 2 or 3 oldies, few young'uns. And that is a balanced squad. For me, the balance isn't quite right there.
I'm just looking at their squad, and I've got to tell you, listener, it was a surprise to me that their 3 goalkeepers come from Argentina, Kosovo and Poland, which was not something that I was expecting. Let's go on to our League 2 games. 2 teams going for promotion meeting at Cresty Road / the Mournflake Stadium. It's Crew Alexandra against Accrington Stanley. Here's your mega serious question for the week, Clarkie. Are these the 2 best suffixes in English football, Stanley and Alexandra?
Gotta be, haven't they? Yeah, outstanding. So English, so British. Yeah, it's good to see. And it's good to see them doing all right, isn't it? Obviously, Stanley have had a bit of a strange season with the owner and the gaffer at loggerheads in public. Crew are doing all right, aren't they? Crew are doing pretty well. Just 1 home loss all season. No shame in that. I think they got beat 2-0 at home to Stockport. But they were poor at home to Bristol Rovers, I think, in the cup this week. They weren't very good at Grimsby against their old manager, Dave Artell, last time out in the league. So they've had a little bit of a blip there. So this is a bounce backable game. They score loads of goals, but they concede plenty as well, don't they? They're very also set piece reliant, Crew Alexandra. 12 set piece goals. That's 3 more than any team in League 2. So, look, Crew will be favourites, won't they, against an Aki team that don't have a load of goals in them. But both are in the mix, and I think the supporters would be happy enough with that.
I was thinking, Sam, because John Coleman's still in charge at Accrington and that's all quietened down a bit. Oh, maybe it actually had a positive effect, that weird kind of public fallout between chairman and manager. But I've just looked at the results and they've won one of their last 6 league games. They had that weird home match against Swindon where they scored 3 times in stoppage time and lost 4-3. So is John Coleman under pressure, or has Andy Holt decided that he can't afford / isn't interested in sacking him? It's a tough one, isn't it? But either way, he could do with picking up some wins if they're going to stay on the fringes of the playoff places as they are now, just a point outside of them.
Yeah, I mean, they're still overachieving, I would say, with that lack of potency. You know, always think about Accrington having, you know, goal-scoring partnerships, and that's not really been evident over the last couple of seasons. They had that kind of standout victory against Wrexham a few weeks ago, which created quite a lot of noise because of the chairman's comments. So they have been in the news, but because of him more so than the manager and his assistant, who obviously had a bit to say a few weeks ago. But they're not 1-3 since then, so this becomes quite a big game. And I've gone full Clarkie here. Just noticed some weird, quite interesting quirks about Crew. Scored 27 second half goals. Far and away the best second half team and the best record in the league after going behind. So 11 out of 20 matches they've conceded first. They've taken 16 points from losing positions, which is an incredible trait to have. 4 wins and 4 draws. So in contrast, Accrington have taken 1 point when falling behind. So Crew are slow starters, but even if Accrington get their nose in front in this game, don't be surprised if Crew come steaming back. And I think that extra goal power, they've had 13 different scorers to Accrington's 8, I think would probably make Crew, and because of the home record, clear favourites for this one under Lee Bell. So, might not be too much in it, but you'd have to fancy Crew to get back to winning ways in what has been, you know, a really good season for them. Something of the surprise package, I would say, in League 2 currently.
Good stuff. All right, we are nearly done for the day. I do have a tweet of the week for the chaps to run the rule over. By the way, we are at EFL What The on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, and What The EFL on Instagram and TikTok. Niall Ennis is on Twitter/X at Niall_Ennis11. This is what he said following Blackburn's win against Bristol City that we mentioned earlier. He's quote tweeted the @Rovers official account, who say full time Rovers 2-1 Bristol City victory under the Ewood lights. Niall Ennis says, "Big result tonight from the lads. Happy to make my full league debut for the club. Applause emoji, blue circle emoji, white circle emoji, @Rovers. Now, Sam, there's not too much to criticise here. Not that that's what we're looking to do. But what I thought was nice was that he's been specific enough to say my full league debut for the club. So he's gone for the competition. He's gone for the fact that he started the game. It's as factually accurate as you'd want a Niall Ennis post-match tweet to be.
I didn't actually notice that, but no, that is good stuff. I don't like this, to be honest. I like him clapping himself. That's excellent. I just think it's nice that the Professional Footballers Association have commented first, actually. I know you'd normally get onto that, Matt.
Clarky, if Twitter/X had been around when you'd made your full league debut for a club, would you be crowing about it publicly?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
probably. I probably would, yeah.
He's not a kid, though, is he? And he's been there all season. He's been contributing.
Yeah, it's his
sorry,
first
Niall. I've been a bit harsh there, haven't I?
I think he always confused me, by the way, because I played with Neil Innes back in the day, so I'm always a little bit confused about his name. But it's Niall Ennis, isn't it? Yeah. No, I've got no complaints. I think, you know, just a little bit of untidy in terms of the grammar. You know, maybe needs a bit of work, but other than that, it's good. Yeah, solid.
Some criticism in the replies for him not changing his header photo, which is still Plymouth getting promoted.
Oh, that is a yellow, isn't it? Yeah.
Brief bio as well. Footballer at Rovers, at Triple S Sports, who are his representatives. Anyway, I liked it, Niall. So well done and congratulations on what we now know was your full league debut. All right, that's going to do it for the show this week. We'll be back again next week with some more. If you'd like to leave us a nice review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, that would be greatly appreciated. Enjoy the football this weekend. We'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.